switch between two terms. Sometimes I'm talking about CS education research, and sometimes I use the term digital education. Okay, it's probably up too loud. Yeah. And by digital education, I mean research in education that's not particularly related to CS courses, but maybe us doing something with for other departments or other courses. All right. So things I want to talk about. I want to talk about what's going on in the department, because there is a lot going on in the department on this field. I want to talk about issues a little bit of, there's some debate and some controversy is it research? Are we doing computer science? How does it fit in and so on? Some sensitive issues there. And I'll talk about a number of things, projects that I've been involved in, some that have been successful and some that have not been as successful. So, first of all, I want to point out that we are a big player in the field. And I'll say, well, I can claim that in just a minute. And this is an area that's got a lot of other heavy hitters in it. So, for example, MIT, you've probably all heard of, say, for example, Project Athena and X-Windows. So they've been doing this kind of stuff for years and years and years. And I guess more recently, they made a bit of a splash with supposedly putting all their courses online, which is something we've been doing for years before they did that, but not the university, not so formally. CMU and Alice, things like that, and Purdue. I think Purdue was the first school to have an engineering education department. I guess we were the second, yeah? All right. You can make of that what you want, and I'll move on. Georgia Tech, a lot of things going on there, particularly they've done a lot of algorithm visualization work, a lot of things. They're also known for like the media education, right, media computation as an introduction. Duke's got a lot of stuff going on. And yet, when we went to SIGC last month, we were the largest contingent there. I think we had 7 CS faculty there. We brought at least that many of our own students with us. We took 2 vans down. And the most interesting thing, a sort of most gratifying thing, was it was like coming from all directions. There were our alumni, people who got PhDs here and are teaching at various schools. We got a couple at Auburn and a number of places. And there must have been at least that many of our alumni who came to SIGC. They're involved, they're doing various projects of their own. And like I said, that was very gratifying to see, and no question, we had to have been the biggest, more Virginia Tech people there than from any other school. So, and if you don't know SIGC, it's the ACM's Special Interest Group Computer Science Education. It's their big annual conference, well supported by Microsoft, Apple, book reps, things like that. It's a pretty big conference. All right. Types of things that are going on here, quite a wide range of things. You see quite a number of people. So digital library related work, part of this National Science, what used to be called the Digital Library. I think they've changed their name slightly, but they use the same acronym. Here led by Ed Fox, developed the Citadel was the original project, and now they've started a new one, sort of a replacement called Ensemble. There's a number of collections efforts going on. The electronic thesis and dissertation effort here came again from Ed Fox out of this department. There's a syllabus repository from Manuel Perez. We're running this, what we call the AlgoViz Wiki for algorithm visualization. I'll talk a little bit more about that later. Steve Edwards says the WebCat project, lots of universities using that software. Cyber Arts Initiative, Steve Harrison, Young Cal. Middle school math projects that Deborah Tater is doing. Again, algorithm visualization. Godmar Bach doing some work with visual debugging. So you see a wide range of things going on, a lot of people involved, and I know I've left off half of what's going on. This is, like I said, just a sampler of the types of projects that we're doing here. All right, so some questions to consider here, and I don't necessarily going to have answers to some of these, but we'll start off with a relatively easy one. What are some of the goals? I'll try to say types of things that we're generally trying to do. And again, this is a broad range of activity. And I have this problem, of course, that I have certain niches. You know, it'd be like asking, what's HCI? And you're going to talk to any given individual, and it's a broad area, and people here doing many different things. And so I'm going to have a rather skewed perspective. But talk about some of the goals of things we're doing. And there's some questions that come up, like, you know, is this scientific research? And even if it is, does that make it computer science? You know, I'll say a little bit about that. So let's start with the goals. So types of things we want to do. Again, my own prejudice is to be sort of artifact-centered, and a lot of other people aren't so much. But certainly things like trying to improve courses, and one way to do that might be to develop courseware. So that's something I'm involved in. You'd like to basically, so how do you make improvements? Well, somehow you'd like to improve the knowledge that the students have, right? So that's one thing we'd like, improve their understanding, increase their level of knowledge gained, and so on. Another thing you might want to do that is somewhat discipline dependent, but in our case, a major proficiency that we attempt to teach people is how to program, right? So we'd like to improve that, and I've got some things to say about some projects related to that. So how about the question, is this scientific research? Well, that, of course, that begs the question, what is scientific research? You know, what are things that we recognize as relevant there? Well, one thing that we would generally consider as necessary to be scientific is, do you have some kind of a measurable effect? All right. So that's a reasonable question to ask for each of these projects. What problem are you trying to solve? How are you going to measure whether you solved it? Can you reproduce it? All right. So a real danger for this type of work is, first of all, for somebody to, in essence, give their opinion on something. And, or even if they give you a measurement, can you do that measurement in your own environment? That's, again, a big controversial thing here. And of course, to be research, you want it to be novel. You want to be doing something new here. So we can try and ask that question for some of the things we do. So does it have a measurable effect? That means we got something to measure. In other words, we need to quantify something. So types of things that we can do to attempt to determine whether we've had an impact would be classic approaches, pre-test, post-test. You've got a class, you're trying to improve the class, and there's a lot of philosophy and potential debates here, but how would you know if you've improved the class? Well, if you've got some material, if you want to define, you know, progress in the class is how well they achieved on certain material, then you could do a pre-test, post-test arrangement and see some absolute measure of how much they did. Or you may have, typical way this goes is you've got multiple interventions and you'd like to know whether one intervention is better than another intervention. Intervention just being, you know, one way you teach versus another way you teach. So you could see the relative performance gains in these treatments, again, perhaps from a pre-test, post-test. All right. Of course, there is this long history of this thing that happens, and that's you do your intervention, and you compare it to some other intervention, and you do your tests, and you can't see a difference between the one and the other. Okay. So no significant difference. I think there's even been books written with that title about education research where they tried to do things and they just couldn't find any difference. It's very, very difficult to find meaningful differences that you can measure. And certainly some projects that I'll talk about, there's some that do and some that don't. And there's this recognized issue that you have to deal with. It's got the name the Hawthorne effect. That is, you can go into a class and you can do something new and different. And because the instructor is enthusiastic about doing this new and different thing, they get an effect. But the risk here is that it's not because of the new and different thing, but just because they're enthusiastic because they're doing something new and different. And it's that which is having the effect and not the actual intervention. So that's one of the dangers we have to worry about. Yeah. All right, is it reproducible? So that Hawthorne effect is implies that, you know, over time that effect isn't gonna last or it isn't gonna be reproducible elsewhere. So there's a lot of issues we've gotta go on. If you're going to find, because there's a lot of confounding influences. So different instructors, ask, do I want to know, does this intervention that I'm going to do better than what I've been doing? And so maybe I'll have one instructor do something in their class, another instructor do something else in their class. Well, the fact that the instructors are different may in itself greatly affect the outcomes. How do we control for that? Other environmental factors, things like, well, the 8 o'clock class versus the 2 o'clock class could in and of itself affect the outcomes. There's usually a lot of things going on between one class and another class, a lot of things that are different. So there's a lot of multiple effects that are intermingled, and how do you separate them out? All right. So again, I give a couple of examples later of things we've done and how we tried to control for some of these. One thing to keep in mind, this is something that the HCI folks in particular, of course, can sympathize with. They got some of the same issues. It's expensive to do this. And what I mean by that is it's hard to get subjects. Sort of a good way to do this would be to use a real classroom setting for whatever you're trying to do. And a classic approach is I got one class that I do this and another class I do that. That's not so simple. Where are you going to come up with those two classes? So if you're at an institution and you've got enough control over the situation, you've got multiple sections of a class, and you can get one section to do the one treatment, another section to do another treatment, you know, that starts to control for some of those variables, but that's a luxury that you often don't have. You know, you may not have a class where there's multiple sections, or you may not be able to have enough control over the situation to be able to get your interventions into those other classes. All right. Is it novel? Well, okay, so one thing that I can say that hopefully, you know, points to some potential for doing some novel things here is, while computers have been around for a while, even in CS, it's only really been the past few years that I could say reliably walk into an arbitrary classroom on campus with my laptop and hope that it works, right? That something I would do in the class, say with some courseware, will actually work. Only within, say, I don't know, maybe like even just the last 5 years that I could count on, you know, being able to use my laptop reliably. Certainly no more than 10 years. So it hasn't really been that long that we could easily do things. I mean, certainly, things like courseware and classes have been going on for decades, but usually there's a lot of overhead with you got to get a special lab and you got to set up stuff, and it's a lot easier now. So there's a lot more opportunity. All right, how about, is it computer science? Well, let me first lay out a couple of scenarios. Yeah. Yeah, well, that's a big deal too. I mean, again, the HCI folks in particular are going to be sympathetic to, you know, and a lot of the things that we've done has had a similar feel. So for example, we did a project where we're developing courseware, and we want to know whether this courseware is useful. And it's like any other software development project with a big interface. And you want to know whether it's first usable. So you first want to do your formative evaluation. And so what do? We bring a student in and we sit them down for, say, half an hour or so. And they go through our software and they give us all the feedback. This is all classic, you know, sort of HCI usability stuff. And you know how expensive that is. And that's just to see if we can get the software to work. We still don't know whether it teaches anything to anybody. And so then we've got to go and then get a bunch of subjects to try and measure these pre-test, post-test things and see if you need enough bodies for that. So this may be one reason why a lot of this research tends to get done, I think, on introductory classes. because there's just enough bodies there, for one thing. Plus, you can say, well, there's more impact because a given introductory class gets talked to a lot more people than a given advanced class. But maybe the advanced classes mean more, I don't know. But it's a lot harder if you can't get enough people to measure anything for those advanced classes. So that's sort of a disincentive to target those classes. All right. So is this stuff that we're doing, is it computer science or is it just pure education research? First, let me say, let's consider a chemistry professor who wants to do things that are studying how to improve chemistry education. What they do, hopefully everyone would agree, will benefit their discipline. And you might ask the question, is it chemistry? Is it chemistry research? Clearly, developing whatever classroom intervention for chemistry isn't, say, doing chemistry. It would benefit the field, hopefully, by improving chemistry education, but they clearly aren't doing chemistry. So you might ask the question, is that, you know, are they doing chemistry research? How about if I were in instructional technology, and we have such a department on this campus, right? If I'm a professor in instructional technology, and as part of my research, I develop instructional technology. And if I apply it to my own classes even, or to other classes, to other departments, I could make a pretty good argument that that's what we do, and that's how we're doing instructional technology research. Engineering education professor. And we have now an engineering education department here. So presumably their job is to go out and do engineering education research, right? And maybe even on their own classes as opposed to, say, in another department. And then we come to computer science. So in the case of the chemistry professor, I think if you say someone doing chemistry education research is doing chemistry research because it benefits their discipline, even if it's not doing chemistry. If you buy it, they're doing chemistry research, and I think you'd buy that everybody else doing research in their education in their own field is doing research in that field. And I think in the case of the instructional technology and engineering education professors, it's pretty clear if they're doing research on that topic, then they're doing research in their discipline. CS is kind of in this middle ground. So, and in this case, well, okay, I'm going a little ahead of myself. It's a little bit in the middle of ground. If I'm developing courseware, then I'm developing program artifacts, right? So I'm clearly programming. And then there's a lot of issues related, well, there's specialized interfaces that are needed here. There's maybe some specialized software engineering and architecture of the software that's going on here. And other things that touch on computer science. So it's a little less clear, but certainly, I guess to say that, you know, some people consider it as computer science research and some don't. I will point out, though, that in a sense, the major professional organizations have ruled on this. They both have ACM and IEEE both have transactions journals on, in the case of ACM, computer science research, in the case of IEEE, engineering education research. And that's kind of the gold standard, right? A transactions level journal. Okay. So one of the things that we do, it's not the only form of education research that we do in computer science, but one of the things we do is develop courseware. And so, of course, there is the domain content in our case. If we do it for computer science, and I call it CS education then, then there's domain content in CS. If I do it somewhere else, I call it digital education, it's not in computer science, and there's the domain content for the someone else, but that's not computer science content. There's, of course, a lot of instructional technology, pedagogy, good pedagogical practice, things that work, things that don't there. There's interfaces, human factors, HCI, needs to be applied here. And then some of these artifacts are pretty big. I mean, some of the software projects that we've worked on need several people over several years. And so you need a fair amount of good practice for software engineering to get this thing to actually work. Okay, so there's my, I raised some of these questions. I haven't necessarily answered some of these questions about whether you're going to consider this science and research and so on, but I've raised some questions. Let me talk about some particular projects. And a number of the things that I've looked at, since I teach data structures a lot, and that's sort of my area, and I'm interested in that course and how to improve it. And it turns out to be, it's an important course and a knotty, thorny problem here. That this particular course, the data structures course, which has gone under various numbers over the years, and it used to be 2604 and then 2606, and now the newest incarnation, it's been promoted to 3114, 3000 level course. The thing about this course is that it's not an intro course. It's not like the first programming course, and one could, and it basically comes down to retention. One could make the argument that you may or may not agree with, but one could make the argument that in the first course in any discipline that someone sees, a lot of people aren't going to be successful because maybe they weren't in the right place to begin with. This course, the data structures course, tends to be third, fourth course in CS they've taken, typically sort of the sophomore level. They've been in here for a while, sort of midway into the program. Historically, we've had a fairly high failure rate, depending on what you mean by failure, but everyone's got their definition for, getting to the technical bureaucracy about departments, but in our department, failure means to get below a C, in effect, because if you don't get at least a C in this course, you don't get to continue on to the next one. And we've historically, for years, had failure rates in the 25, between a quarter and a third, maybe. Between a quarter and a third of the students who take this course, it varies from year to year. Maybe in a good year, maybe it's only a fifth don't make it. In a bad year, maybe a third don't make it. Don't make that C or better. Now, they may eventually get through. They may retake it or so on. But that's a pretty high loss rate for a course sort of in the middle of the curriculum. And so I've over the years done a number of things to try and look at what can we do about that. And